Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Is your underwear in need of a refresh? Meet Tomboy X, makers of the original boxer briefs for women, queer-founded and queer-run. Tomboy X designs sustainable, gender-inclusive underwear and apparel in sizes 3 extra small to 6 extra large. Use code IHEART at checkout for 20% off your first purchase only at TomboyX.com. Shop now on TomboyX.com.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 328, episode 2 of Der Daily Zeitgeist, a production of iHeartRadio. This is a podcast where we take a deep dive into America's shared consciousness, and it is Tuesday, March 5th, 2024.
Yeah.
3524.
Hey, man, it's a scumbag buffet because it's two consumable items have their national day: National Cheese Doodle Day and National Absinthe Day.
So
why don't you bust out the sugar cubes and lighter, get your absinthe on, and then, you know, top it off with some nice cheese doodles, just to give yourself, you know, a fully balanced meal today.
What is it? Cheese doodle.
It's like a Cheeto, like a puff Cheeto. Yeah.
I feel like, so the way you get cheese doodles, you ever see one of those fireworks that like turns into like a shit tube, like a little snake?
Yeah, a little snake.
So that's
yeah.
how those are created. They do that and then powder them in cheese.
Yeah. Exactly.
Who says America doesn't build anything anymore?
I don't know. Oh, yeah. We're the great international greats. I feel like cheese doodles have to be wildly flammable, right?
Why would they be flammable?
I don't know.
Everything in America is probably flammable.
It just seems like it's like 80% petroleum for some reason. The puffiness.
It's just corn.
Of it.
It's just corn, man.
It's just corn. Well, which corn is
ethanol.
Corn.
Yeah,
that's right.
It's made with the byproducts.
So I Googled cheese doodles to find out what they were, and someone had posted in r/chips, all caps, "Wise, why did you change the cheese doodles recipe?" All caps.
Yeah.
Like, looks like 6 or 7 question mark and exclamation marks, all caps. This is actually a very big thread of people just whose lives have been ruined by a company changing
the rot economy reaches offline and into your cheese doodle bag, as we're going to get to.
Flawless.
But yeah, before we get into it, my name is Jack O'Brien, aka when I get to the party and I sit in a comfortable chair, then I unzip my pants and avoid Ringo stare till we get to the climax and we're coming again. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Do you want to sit in a circle? Do you want to scream Winston Churchill? Circle jerkle, nana nana nana, circle jerkle, nana nana nana, circle jerkle. That is courtesy of Cleo Universe. Shout out to you. And shout out to the Beatles.
That song ends with him saying, "I got blisters on my fingers."
I know, from jerking off in front of each other.
Beating off in front of John Lennon.
That's right. This is, of course, a reference to the fact that the Beatles did jack off in front of each other. Yeah. And we know that, and I don't feel comfortable knowing it without you knowing it. So yeah, there you go. I'm thrilled to be joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray.
It's Miles Gray, a.k.a.
Blue in, blue out, blue in, blue out, blue in. I'm a monster head, tastes better than the rest. Blue fecal dread, monster head, still a monster head, tastes better than the rest. Blue fecal dread, yeah. My perp is turning blue. My poop is turning blue, yeah.
That's courtesy of Hugo Boss. Obviously, that was to the tune of Machine Head by Bush. And obviously, that's a reference to my love of blue ice cream that does affect the color of my...
of your poo.
Excretions. Yes. Yeah. Thank you
it's
for
also,
listening.
It's also, it's crazy, but Schoolboy Q heard you say that last week and changed the title of his album
to Blue Lips.
Yeah. And he was talking about, of course, both lips, the lips going in and your butthole lips.
Exactly. My
cheeks. Gross. Gross, yeah. I
Thanks
say.
Thanks for that bit of improv.
Yeah. Sorry about that. Our guest, I love getting like this up top when we have an expert guest.
Yeah.
Just make sure they know what they're in for.
I'm just pissed off I wasn't told to prepare a song.
Oh, Ed, next time, man.
Yeah, next time I'll come in with one.
Yeah.
We are thrilled to be joined by a tech journalist, writer behind the newsletter, Where's Your Ed At? His new podcast with Cool Zone Media, Better Offline, is a must listen.
Yeah.
Also, how I found out about that New York Magazine, The Cut, personal finance expert being scammed to the tune of $50,000 cash in a shoebox. I think how a lot of people found out about it. It's Ed Zitra!
Ed!
What's up?
Where's your head at?
That is exactly where it's from. Every single...
Yeah, dude, Rudy?
Rudy, fantastic album.
Yeah. It's Rudy, right? With the ape, that like albino ape on it? Yeah.
Oh, what a great song. Well, great album,
Jax. Yeah. All right. Well, we're starting on a high note, Ed.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, next time, we will give you ample time to prepare an AKA that either has to do with fecal matter or circle jerking with the Beatles or something like that. Or something of your own choosing.
You can start preparing now.
Just sitting there thinking, for like, what can I put to Bush's glycerin?
Glycerin. Sometimes they just, like, doesn't that song say, got a machine head? Like,
yeah.
He's just like, this is a cool title, and I'm just going to be like, got a machine. It doesn't really.
Better than the rest. Green to the red, right? Green to red, machine head. Yeah.
Not exactly Shakespeare.
Not quite. They would like come up with a cool word and then just be like, I've got one of those.
They're not as good as the Hives, though. The Hives are just complete nonsense. They're my favorite band. It's like, the Joker got a smoker and a bong got a gong. Wow! I listened to the latest album recently. It was like, this is awful lyrically. I feel like I'm getting a concussion listening to it, which is why I kept listening to it.
Right. Yeah, that's what happens.
I feel like with the Bush guy, it's a little bit
Gavin Rossdale.
Gavin Rossdale is a little bit of the bubble, like the 30 Rock episode where John Hamm is a doctor who's just so good looking that people are just like, damn, man, you are the best doctor ever. And he like doesn't know he doesn't know shit. He's like, hey, here, try my special recipe, orange chicken. And it's just chicken cooked in orange Gatorade. Like, I feel like Gavin Rossdale is just so stunningly
You think
gorgeous,
he has hot that, people problems?
Oh, I don't know. Yeah. I think he's just
a good looking guy.
Gavin Rossdale, wasn't he? I mean,
people were definitely thirsting over him in the U.S.
In the U.S. Like,
when Bush first hit, when Bush first came out, for sure.
I mean,
this guy looks like a slightly upgraded Jeremy Clarkson. Come on,
wow!
I don't know. I think I gave him a lot of credit once he got with Gwen Stefani. You know,
he went with Gwen. Oh, so he is the reason why they haven't made a good album since Return of Saturn.
That's right.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Anyways, this is album talk.
Yeah.
No, Ed, how are you doing? Where are you coming to us from?
Las Vegas, Nevada, where I live.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Beautiful Las Vegas, Nevada.
How long have you lived in Vegas?
3 years.
Okay. Where'd you live before that?
California. I was in Oakland.
Oh, okay. Wow. You went from the East Bay. Wow. You really followed the Raiders.
Oh, yeah. Well, I didn't do it for that reason.
No.
would you look at the product on the field?
Yeah.
Nah, I love it here, though.
Yeah. You like to go visit the immortal flame of Al Davis and just kind of shed a tear right in front of it.
The Raiders will to win.
Yeah, yeah.
When you go there and do the tour, they all say that stuff to you. It's all that propaganda.
Oh,
and it's
really?
Just like, you can't be saying that shit anymore. When Maurice Jones-Drew was like an exciting guy on your team, it means things have been bad for a while.
Yeah, yeah. Oof, man.
Oy.
MJD.
Yeah.
What is it like living in Vegas? Are you hitting any of the shows? Is it what I imagine it to be? Just, you know, rat pack shit every night? You and
yeah,
the
just
boys
me
rolling
and a
bunch down of the street?
Boys,
yeah, martinis. Yeah.
Plenty. No, so I'm a huge homebody.
Yeah.
I don't like going out. So I am at home most of the time. But when I do go out, I like to be very precise. I don't like to go out for an evening. I want to go out, have dinner, have drinks, come home. Vegas is so convenient. You
yeah,
can get pretty much anywhere here in 20 minutes. This is great if you're... I guess I'm addicted to staying at home and drinking Diet Cokes, which is pretty easy to manage. But if you have another addiction, Vegas will find a way to bring it to you.
Oh, yeah.
Or bring
yeah.
you to it.
Yeah.
And so this place drives people insane, but it has one of the best food cultures I've ever seen.
Right.
It's really cool. If you are in control of yourself... It's amazing.
Right.
If you're not, it
right.
will burn
yeah.
you to death.
Yeah.
yeah.
The economy sure. is like based on, you're, so like people who are in control of themselves get to like have better times than they would otherwise because
yes.
the economy is fueled by all these people with very difficult problems. That
but also it's become a lot more respectable. Like it's a lot more like going out to nice restaurants and shows and music now
right.
than it used to be when it was going out and making a mistake or five.
Yeah, yes. yeah.
Now it's less that it's the strip's much nicer. Fremont Street's horrible though. People need to stop saying go for it's horrible there. It's also really expensive now.
Mm.
It's
yeah.
a very strange place.
So
love
is
it,
everywhere, though. It turns out.
Yes.
Yeah,
but
everything.
Yeah, last time I was in Vegas, I had the thought that this would be a good place to take my kids. So
yeah.
Which I oh,
right,
would not
like,
have been the thought I had.
At the Luxor, and you're like, oh, yeah, you can go see
the,
bodies.
He's at the blackjack table.
Yeah. yeah, exactly.
I love this.
Sharks. Like, there's a whole thing that's just, there's a whole, like, thread of culture and content that is, like, just all woven throughout the strip that is, like, aimed yeah. at 5 to 12-year-old boys. There's, like,
dude, there's
sharks
a time,
and Michael Jackson, which they're really into for some
well,
reason.
Well, I mean,
yeah.
don't want to put him in the same
yeah,
sentence as five-year-old
right.
boys. But.
That's true.
There's, yeah, I remember a time when my mom would go with her friends, just like they would go gamble. She would give me $20 or something and be like, I'll be back in a few hours.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I can make this work. And I just go played Mortal Kombat or something. Yeah, exactly.
yeah. All right, Ed, we're going to get into the rot economy and just various.
What that is.
Yeah, various things that I've learned from reading you and listening to your podcast. But before we do that, we like to get to know you a little bit better by
Absolutely.
Asking you either what is something from your search history that's revealing about who you are, or what is something that you've recently screencapped that is revealing about who you are?
So my thing is, if you go to my Google search history, it's like Queens of the Stone Age Live 4K, and then a series of Boolean strings to see if any new bootleg has risen to the top.
Mm.
Because I'm a huge Queens of the Stone Age fan. Seen
okay.
16 times. I love this
wow.
band. I listen to them all the time.
Nice.
And I just trolled YouTube because it used to be back in the day. And I used to find bootlegs. I used to have to go on the internet, get people email them, have an FTP thing. You have all this
yeah.
crap. No, it's just all on YouTube now.
Right.
So like that is a large part of my Googling. And
yeah.
that and like someone / earnings. Like I'm usually looking at like random tech earnings, just like reading dross and then sitting there like banging my head against the desk being like, how can this company exist? This is a bad company.
Right.
Just torturing myself every day.
How do you, question from Ed, is it? How do you exist?
Yeah. You're like Josh Home earnings.
Hey, I just got a spam phone call, by the way.
Nice. Cool.
Just
great.
A little preview of what we're talking about. Yeah, phones yeah. don't work anymore. What is something that you think is underrated?
Underrated is Vegas's dining scene. I've lived in New York, lived in San Francisco, lived in London, obviously, and I'm used to, London, I wouldn't say is great dining culture, but I've been around great food cities, and I think Vegas is one of the best in the world.
What do you chalk that up to in the sense of like go to any place there and it's going to be good or that there's
yes,
a high
there
concentration
is,
of good restaurants?
The amount of B+ restaurants here is much larger than anywhere else.
Right. So, yeah.
Generally pretty affordable as well. And there are some really, really, really nice high-end ones. Bazaar Meat is one of the best restaurants in the world.
Huh.
And also, every Vegas restaurant has a bit of, like, the service is always a bit of extra fun.
Right.
You get a lot out of it. So shout Why? Out to Gerardo and mean? Bazaar Meat. Like, there's usually a little bit of a show. Not, like, something stupid, but they're super charming. They remember everything. The service culture, it's actually a surprisingly working class city. Very strong unions here, which is awesome.
Right.
And the servers, like, love their jobs in most, even in cheaper places. Like, it seems like a pretty great city for food, and yet people come here and they're like, oh, it's just all chains. And yeah, there are chains here. There's every goddamn chain, it feels like.
Yeah, right, sure.
But, like, the actual food is great, and you can find something pretty good even on really, really crowded days.
Like, so is this strictly to the Strip, or are we talking,
no, this,
like,
is everywhere.
This is everywhere. So, kinda, like, what's your favorite?
Because, like, if a theme restaurant got turned into a city, that's Las Vegas,
yeah,
right?
Like, there's
Las
no
Vegas
culture.
Is a city-sized theme restaurant.
It's just
so
cultural,
it makes sense,
cultural
that
appropriation
there would be a lot of
scaled.
Yeah,
right.
That's right.
Wait, it's so, like, what's your favorite off-Strip restaurant? Just so, like, you know, just to give me an idea, because I think when people go, they are always looking like, well, what's on the Strip? But I've had great Thai food. I think that's just on the off the Strip.
So this is a bar rather than a restaurant, but the Wine Patio Library is the wine. It may just be called, like, the Wine Patio now. It's in, like, a strip mall. Uh-huh. It's my mate who used to be a sommelier in Bellagio. Took me there, and it's always quiet, even when there's lots of people in there. Just the vibe is wonderful in there. It's nice and chill. And technically, it's not quite off strip, but Casa Playa in the Encore is pretty good for Mexican food.
Okay.
My mate used to do the mezcal stuff there, and the mezcal is fantastic. But, like, it's just there are lots of fun places to go. Jing in Summerlin is also pretty good sushi.
Okay.
Like, there are lots of, like,
right,
fun places to go and find. And Summerlin is, it's very much a master plan community, but it's beautiful. It's more like Santa Monica than it is Vegas.
Mm. What, as somebody from outside the U.S., like, what was your perspective on Vegas before you moved there? And because it feels, like, I sometimes say what I think one of the things that will be in museums about our time, specific time in history, is the Cheesecake Factory menu, because it's maximalist and appropriation, which is kind of the main thing that America does. And I feel like, yeah, like you said, that is what Las Vegas is, but
it does things well. Like,
yeah,
the quality is pretty, like, Yardbird inside the Venetian is one of my favorite restaurants anywhere. It's a chain there in, like, LA and Austin. I love that place.
Yeah.
There's tons of, and there are cheaper places that are great too. The buffets are pretty good.
Yeah.
And I'd been to Vegas a lot before I moved here. Like, a lot. Because I used to go with my mate Phil, who's a nuclear health and safety guy.
Oh shit. And we used to go Phil?
Yeah, Phil. Damn. At Funranium. No, oh, see,
I know
so
Phil.
We used to he taught me to play craps as well, which is fun. But I used to go, and his whole thing was discipline. So we just walk around and find fun when, I don't know, just the tables were a bit rough and we didn't want to go back to them for a bit. And thus, my whole thing with Vegas has always been exploration rather than burning my entire bankroll down.
Yeah. Right.
And so it's just, I've always liked it. And the residential places are great. Like, housing is still decently affordable. I'm sure that's going to change eventually, like it is everywhere else. But it's a damn sight better than California was.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's changing rapidly, very quickly all the time here.
Yeah. Nothing's affordable in California. That's the difference between us and everywhere else. Not a single thing. What is something you think is overrated?
In-N-Out.
In-N-Out, the one affordable thing in California.
In-N-Out,
you're saying it's overrated.
It sucks. I'm sorry. That burger doesn't taste good. Hurts my tummy.
Okay.
I'm British. We're used to crap. And it's just like the milkshakes are good, but the burgers are just crap. The fries are awful.
Right.
Like, what
fries
are you talking
are bad.
About?
I agree with that.
Like, what, California people always telling me, like, acting like this happens a lot. It's like, hey, how you doing? I love it now. Like, okay. Look, you said this yesterday.
Yeah.
Right.
Why did you call me to tell me that? But people will say, it's like, oh, it's so good. And I've had it in the original place. I've had the various franchises, or, well, they're not franchises, various different satellite ones. And it's just kind of meh. It's just whatever. It's not as good as Shake Shack.
Yeah.
It's not as good as Five
it's much
Guys.
Cheaper.
Yeah.
I think it's much cheaper than both of those.
I know a burger van in Twickenham that's better than In-N-Out. You know what I mean?
I severely doubt that any burger out of Twickenham is better than anything made in a restaurant or a kitchen versus scraped off the floor.
It's interesting, too, because most people just say it's fine rather than you got the point perspective. You're like, dude, this shit is gross. It's
and that's
fucking
the thing.
Me up.
It hurt my tummy twice now.
Yeah, that's not good.
I've been conned into eating In-N-Out twice.
Oof. Yeah.
And
protect the
also, it was just, I was hungry and it was the only thing we could get.
Yeah. It happens. It happens.
But yeah.
It's also one of our most popular In-N-Outs, or one of our most popular overrated, I'd say.
Yeah.
Especially
to people who, in that sense. I think it's like anybody who interacts with it is just like, it's built up in this mythical way. And then it's like the same thing with like Chick-fil-A too. It's like built up in a way if you're not around it all the time. And then you're like, oh, all right. Like, yeah, fine. But I'm not like going to change my middle name to In-N-Out like people would have me believe the result would be.
No, it's mainly the thing that's good about it is the price point compared to the quality. Like, I think the fresh produce on your burger is really the thing that is unique about it, and the low price point. And I mean, my main reason for liking it is because of the Bible verses on my cups, which brought me to Jesus. And that's, you know.
I thought they were like weird libertarians, or I'm thinking of someone else.
Probably. I mean,
sure.
They just have
a little Bible verse. I mean, it's not very specific. Yeah. They don't have the quote on there. They're just directing you.
John 3:16, check it out.
Hey, while you're eating these fries, have you tried Jesus?
Have you considered the fact that
this Jesus thing?
Yeah. God loved the world. He loved you so much. He gave his only begotten son.
He gets us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I loved getting that commercial during the Super Bowl, though.
It was so
I loved
good.
That there was a commercial because it's like, who is the person who's like, what the fuck is that? Who, Jesus?
Yeah.
Not familiar and don't care to learn more.
Yeah. I'll look him up.
All right. Ed, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about what you describe as the rot economy, what we've talked about on our show before as like the sense that things that we're served by companies are getting like worse. Just everything's getting worse. So we'll be right back.
Do you want to hear about the $100 wedding dress that just saved Abercrombie?
Or the tech acquisition that was just like Game of Thrones?
Or the one financial equation that can solve climate change?
Then check out our daily podcast, The Best One Yet, or as we call it, T-Boy.
This is Nick.
This is Jack.
And we pick the three most interesting business news stories every day for the perfect mix.
20 minutes each morning, you're going to feel brighter.
We call it Pop Biz, don't we, Jack?
Where pop culture meets business news. So whether you want to kick off a conversation with your buddies,
or you're going for that promotion at work,
or you just want to know the trends before your friends,
feel brighter by starting your morning with us every weekday.
Listen to The Best One Yet on the Wondery app or wherever you get your pods.
You can listen to The Best One Yet ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. For more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts.
With shows like The Best One Yet, How I Built This, and many more, Wondery means business.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
There's nothing worse than wearing clothes that don't fit right. That's why Tomboy X makes size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. Queer founded and run for over 10 years, you can trust they know a thing or two about making the perfect pair. Feel comfortable in your own skin. Shop online today and use code IHEART for 20% off your first purchase. Only at TomboyX.com. Tomboy X. Fit for you just as you are.
And we're back.
We're back.
And the things that we've talked about getting worse on here, there are endless examples, but it feels like capitalism is kind of broken of late. It feels like maybe, I don't know when exactly it started, but it feels like in the past 10 years, it has been absolutely palpable that we've broken away from like company creates a good product. You want good product because it's good. Therefore, company profits and continues making good product. Like has that system has broken. And I don't know, you've talked about it with regards to Google search. I've read about it with dating apps. But where do you usually start when somebody asks you, what is the rot economy? Where do you usually start?
I think Google is a great place to start, but Instagram is as well. So yeah. You go on Instagram these days and you think, I want to see pictures and videos from people I follow. What Instagram wants to show you is something else.
Yeah,
they want to show you, it's much worse on Facebook, I'd say. They want to show you a video ad or like a piece of sponsored content. Facebook does this thing where they only show you like an animated GIF of the first 2 seconds so that you will engage with it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And this is all because Facebook has Meta, I guess you call them now.
No, it's fine.
Never going to do it. It's been like three. I'm not going to do it.
In this house, we will call Twitter.
In this house, we call it.
In this house, we call it.
Yes, we call it Facebook. Twitter and Facebook. Twitter. Yeah.
And the reason they're doing that is because these companies have effectively turned against their users. Now their whole thing is that they must show growth every quarter, growth, growth, growth. And the result is Google search does not show you results that you'd like. They show you results that Google has regurgitated and messed around so that you'll maybe click a sponsored link. Or because a company that has done something called search engine optimization has found a link that they can trick Google into showing you. As a result, Google is worse, but Google does not care. Google doesn't give a rat fuck. They still make money off the ads by showing you them. If you accidentally click one, they'll make money off that too. And it's why things are getting worse in so many ways. It's why you find companies that keep doing things, another great example from Google, pushing AI into their Google Assistant, despite the AI not being as good as the already existing Google Assistant platform. Now, they're doing this because they want to show the street that they are in AI. So the street will go, wow, I want to buy and hold Alphabet stock.
Right.
Now, you may think, but wouldn't this piss off the customers? Yes. But that's why Google has something called a monopoly. They pay, over $10 billion a year to Apple so that Google is the default search engine on iPhones.
I wasn't aware of that. So Google,
it's so good. Yeah. It's all so good. And what you're going to do? Use Bing?
Right.
Why don't we
use Bing? Is it just because?
Because it's just as bad.
Yeah.
Because it's just Microsoft's way of screwing
us. It's owned by Microsoft.
It's the same deal.
And they also use AI with that too,
It is a result of the markets disconnecting from good business. They don't look at companies and say, is this a company that can survive without hiring or firing a bunch of people at once? Is this a company that is in a sustainable form of business, one that will grow steadily rather than pop and then potentially drop? No, they're just like growth, 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 growth.
Right. And then eventually it's like make the product worse and then we can
iterate. Well, the product gets worse and the street doesn't care. It's not like they have to put, we completely ruined Google search in their earnings. And they don't care. These people don't care. The people who are actually investing at the scale that Google gives a shit about don't really care. They care about they don't even care about profit. Yeah. I don't know why you even said profit there. They just care about revenue growth, market growth, growth at all costs. And it's why things are worse. And it's why Apple shoved out the Vision Pro half completed, because they just needed to show the street that Apple is still making new things.
Yeah.
Even though it gives you a goddamn headache.
That's like an unfinished product.
Yeah, we should talk about that. Yeah. So Ed, reviews tech products and reviewed the Apple Vision Pro, and you called it the single most interesting and annoying piece of technology ever made.
Yes, pretty much.
You just can't type with it?
Yeah, so it has an on-screen, in air, I guess, keyboard where you have to poke it. You have to poke the bits and it just doesn't work very well. You can't really touch it. You can't use your little fingers on it like you would type on a normal keyboard. You have to poke at it like a gorilla.
Right.
It's very weird. And Also, I tried to use it several times on an airplane recently, and it just gave me a headache.
Right.
Mm. And it's insane, by the way, that this is not a bigger story, that Apple's new thing just gives people headaches. But you know, what the hell? Who cares? The street loves it.
Yeah. And the street, and, not being Crenshaw Boulevard, but Wall Street.
Yes, correct. Yes, and yes, the wider markets.
Yeah, right.
And it sucks because the result of this, the result of markets rewarding companies that show revenue growth rather than make good things that people like and building companies sustainably, is companies are no longer incentivized to innovate. They're not incentivized to make cool new things. They're incentivized to find ways to grow their pocketbooks. And it's profit. Sometimes it's just revenue.
Right. When did this like inversion happen where we sort of left, we completely jettisoned ourselves from like, yeah, you got to make something novel to earn the money that people are going to give you. I mean, because it felt like there was a time where it's like every iPhone doesn't feel revolutionary anymore. It's just just something they changed one thing that people hated about the last one. Like, dude, get ready for the revolution or whatever. But when did that actually become like really sort of maybe not articulated, but really, I guess, in a way, really measurable or noticeable?
So I think it starts since 2011 with a guy called Marc Andreessen, one of the principals at Andreessen Horowitz, a large venture capitalist firm that is very influential in the Valley and also one of the early investors in Facebook and a bunch of other companies. He wrote a thing called Software is Eating the World. Now, the people that glanced at it once and said, whoa, that sounds good, didn't really read it deeply. What he was saying in there was that tech companies should not be valued based on their actual financials and what they do and build, but based on a vague sense of like innovation and what tech can do for society. It was
the promise
of tech and the theoretical thing. And then around that time as well, one of the other guys, Ben Horowitz, put out a blog that said, yeah, maybe we don't need to just have companies that build sustainably. What if we just had them grow as fast as humanely possible? Right. Imagine what we could sell them for. Very out with what they thought. This inspired the venture capital community to start investing in companies, not just based on whether they thought they'd grow sustainably or otherwise, and whether they'd fulfill a market thing, like a market need, but only make them fulfill a market need. Only make them grow to get as many people and live basically on a form of venture-backed welfare. Uber being a great example of a company that has turned a profit maybe two quarters in its existence. Right.
Yeah.
And they were propped up by venture dollars. They used their unfair market share because they could just wade in with low prices, cut cab companies out. Not that cab companies were great, but that's what they used.
Right.
And then Uber just grew and grew and grew unsustainably. And now they're just cutting fares for drivers now. They're screwing the drivers over. The experience is worse. It's harder to get an Uber and it's more expensive when you do.
Right.
And they're still deeply unprofitable. Companies like Uber were extremely prevalent in the middle of the 2010s. There was the Uber for everything thing, but every startup felt like they weren't real companies. They were just stuffed full of venture capital dollars to eat as much market share as they could before they got sold to a public company or merged with another one very rarely.
Sorry, real quick, I need to take a break. My Washio driver is here to pick up my
your Washio
laundry.
Driver.
Yeah.
Washio was one of them around that
time. Yeah, Washio was one of the laundry for Uber. Laundry for pet goldfish.
Yeah.
But something happened around the mid-2010s when I think they realized, we don't really need to try quite as hard. And tech just started making promises without delivering them. And the street still loved them. These companies still kept getting acquired.
Yeah.
And a bunch of consolidation happened as well. Qualcomm kind of hoovered up a lot of the Bluetooth technology. Meta bought WhatsApp. They bought Oculus. These things happened that didn't seem bad at the time. But slowly, tech was consolidating everything. And then just tech stopped delivering innovation at the pace it did, which isn't really its fault. Sometimes innovation slows. But the valuations kept going up. They kept going up and up and up and up and up.
Yeah.
And then it just became obvious that the things that people were valuing these companies on were not really based on reality. They weren't based on them being good. But then the moment they went public, something weird happened. They suddenly started falling apart. They weren't doing too well. And you'd think at this point, you'd be like, okay, so maybe this would make the tech companies change their businesses to be some kind of profit-generating entity. Oh, no, absolutely not. They just learned how to show growth metrics. Why do you think Snap, a company that has very rarely made any money at all, but now makes, I forget exactly, I think, are they at $1 billion of revenue? But nevertheless, but they don't make any profit at all, but because they can always grow, and the teens use them. Oh, that's a good company. Despite the fact that Snapchat is one of the more insane apps. You opened it recently? It's like a minefield of different buttons and noises. It's like going to the fucking circus. It's insane. Every Uber, there's like 11 different buttons that you can hit now.
What version of Uber do you want to use? Yeah, right.
Snap, like, realized, that's part of it, right? Is to like make it unusable so that old people don't figure out how to use
No, it's to try and sell you as much as possible, get as much growth adjacent matrices bullshit as possible, and then flog it to the markets. Right. And it works. And it works so well, even though the product is worse, even though customers are less happy.
Yeah.
Because that doesn't matter as long as number go up.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
And they stop paying attention. So to get the growth, usually they have to build something that pays attention to the user, like actually fulfills the user, you know, interest or something the user wants. But the second they get to, you know, going public and answering to Wall Street, it just becomes completely decoupled, and it becomes a thing where they're only paying attention to the people who are speaking for investors or writing, you know, things for investors to pay attention to.
I have one other thing that's very sad. The real decoupling was toward the end of the 2010s, which was when venture-backed startups realized, why don't we just do this growth shit early? Why don't we just stop growing at all costs as early as possible?
Right.
And that's where we are right now. That's why startup investment is around AI. It's like search engine optimization, but for venture capital. People are no longer building companies to serve a market need. They're building companies that they can sell to venture capital, who can pump them full of money so they can sell to a bigger company. And I realize this is all quite complex, but it really comes down to this. People are no longer building companies, or at least a large amount of them aren't building companies to sell something to a consumer. They are thinking, how can I appear to have the growth metrics that will get me enough money so that I can grow this company into something I can sell?
Right.
Yeah.
And it sounds very cynical, but it's been happening for a while, but it's now got to a point where the shark has been jumped far too many times, and people are noticing. They're very upset.
But it's being sold not to people, not to the people who it's supposed to be serving, right? It's being sold to this third-party investor.
There's enough of a product so that a user isn't just literally using nothing, though they did try with crypto, by the way, to do it without that.
Right.
There were so many crypto companies that had no product at all. It was just...
Yeah.
Look at the AI companies, these generative AI companies, ChatGPT. ChatGPT allegedly makes over $1 billion of revenue. Don't know what profit, though. They're not making any.
Right.
What does ChatGPT do? No one can really answer. Like, it does a bunch of things, kind of, but why do you need it?
Right, right. What
general purposes? It's a general purpose technology.
Right.
I need it to... worth $80 billion, and it generates stuff that can be kind of useful, but also it sometimes just lies.
Yeah, just making things up. Because it's like it doesn't know anything.
Sorry. No, it hallucinates. Okay.
Yes.
Which means it's actually like tripping, and that gives it kind of a cool, fun, druggy vibe.
Well, I know why they use that term, because it's not technically lying, because ChatGPT doesn't know anything.
Right.
It has been trained on data, but each time it is generating an answer based on a data set. So it can't lie because it doesn't have a concept of truth or information.
Yeah.
Right. It's figuring it out as it goes along.
Aren't we all?
Yeah. So this whole process, like, I have not been on the dating apps, but like reading that's something that's been coming up more lately is that like Match Group, I think, is like Match.com bought all the dating apps and they are ultimately, you know, people who have been on them for years are like, they are as bad as they've ever been right now. And the companies are incentivized to, you know, basically get you to pay for a version of their product that costs money, that is a subscription service. So they give you a free version that sucks, get you to pay for a more expensive version. I guess that's as old as capitalism. But then, like, they're also incentivized to keep you single. Like they, you know, if you get married, they lose two consumers.
I'm actually really glad you brought up dating apps because they are the perfect rock economy company.
Yeah.
Ostensibly, it makes sense they'd want to keep you on the app as much as possible. That using those apps, their goal is to keep you on them as long as possible, as with any app. Right. So really, their goal is to fulfill the need of making personal connections.
Right.
So I haven't been on them over a year. Like, I'm thankfully engaged. Thank Christ. It's horrifying out there.
Yeah.
So glad. But these apps used to be, like OkCupid used to be one where you'd send longer messages. Hinge used to be where you'd meet kind of normal, weird people. Coffee Meets Bagel was just strange, but it was better than Plenty of Fish, which was a place where you got scammed. But nevertheless, these places where they made their money on...
That is my kink, actually, is getting scammed. So I love being scammed. That was cute for me. Yeah.
But, oh my God, she took so much of my fucking money.
But by and large, these apps made their money off of the premium subscription, which allowed you to do things like send multiple messages, which made sense. And that makes sense because you get a freemium product and then you'd upgrade. However, because these are all owned by a public company that needs to show growth of revenue, of users, what have you, well, they realized, what if we had a bunch of microtransactions? So each of these apps has some sort of paid-for super like, which means you can really show someone you like them. And then you can pay a subscription so that you can send more messages, do more likes. But all of them have basically copied the Tinder model of the swipe right, swipe left. So you're right. They do want to keep you single because the only way out of them is to pay them a shit ton of money. They on Hinge, at the very least, I know that they reserve your best matches unless you pay for them. And they're extortionately expensive, like $2 or $3 per rose or something. And that was for all the normal people who didn't have AI generated captions were on there.
Yeah.
And it was just so strange. Well, I guess it wasn't AI back in 2022, but nevertheless, these companies now, dating apps are no longer for dating. Therefore, finding ways to convince people to spend as much money on them or trap them in an endless thing where if you're anything less than Instagram level beautiful, you'll have trouble meeting people. And it's so fucked up because you'd think that this would affect them, but no, they're making more money than ever because people have no other way of meeting other people. Yeah. Our society is not great at introducing you to new friends. It's harder than ever. An adult friend finder was not the website I thought it would be. But it's horrifying because this is every app now. It's the same with Bumble. It's the same with Hinge. It's the same with Tinder. Tinder has some like $500 version. I don't know. They just, I feel like they make these things up just to get headlines.
But I think it's all owned by Match, right?
Yes. Like, and it's all owned by like one company.
Right.
It's so they have a monopoly. Insane.
So you can't get out of there.
There's just like this really there's this disconnect, right? Where it's like as consumers, we're like, yo, this shit sucks. Like, what the fuck happened, right?
But what else are they going to do?
Right. But then there's like this level of insulation, right? For the people that are making the apps and then the venture capital people who are like, yo, I can make a ton of money on this. And there's like this insulation, like really from, I guess, you know, there's like the market, which is what they're like, they have eyes towards that. Then there's the people that are using the product. They could give a fuck about.
Well,
like
Tinder
how...
was one of the last quote unquote good startups. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was a good, Sean Rad is a peculiar fella, but that was one made before the shift happened.
Right.
Tinder in its original form was swiping right and left, but I don't even think it monetized at first.
Right. But I mean, like, you know, like, I've heard you talk about this too, is that they're only going by what's being encouraged. And obviously the investor class is saying like, if you make the line go up, we don't give a shit what you're doing. Just make the fucking line go up.
User go up, money go up. Yes.
So how is it that, you know, like, and I think you've pointed, you know, it's sort of like partially it's because obviously investors, they're going to encourage it. And also the media is not really, really critical of what's going on. What's like the consumer piece? Is it just to merely say like, well, we're going to boycott this thing or what? Like, is this completely, this sort of, all of this activity is happening on another plane of existence where the everyday consumer is like, I'm completely at the fucking will of these greedy.
Well, like, what it is monopolies.
Right.
It's monopolies and the people in charge don't care. Why do you think flying sucks so much? Because all of the airplane companies are like, we can fuck them on a certain level. We can all agree that these people are little pigs. We're going to make these little pigs pay.
Right.
What are you going to do? How are you going to date?
Right.
How are you going to date? If you want to use Hinge, same deal. Coffee Meets Bagel, same deal. Tinder, same deal. All these apps copy each other. And all of these apps move, they all normalize towards a whole where they all kind of look the same but have a slight enough difference. And then people will get all of them because they have no other bloody choice. Google search, what you going to do? You're going to use DuckDuckGo? You can use Bing?
Right.
Idiot. No way.
Yeah.
What you going to do there? You're going to use Uber? You're going to use Lyft? Because that's your real only choice.
That's so grim.
And like, it gets grimmer. It gets grimmer. Think about your restaurants. You know that those DoorDash and Uber Eats orders, most of these people, they have to give up like 20, 30%. The restaurants have to give up to the delivery apps. What are they going to do? Not have delivery?
Right.
Right.
And there are companies fighting that, but consumers don't have choices. There is not strong antitrust in this country.
No, no, no.
They stopped Spirit and JetBlue merging. That was actually good. But otherwise, the hell else are you going to do? You're going to use another one of the dating apps that don't exist? You're going to use another delivery app? You're going to use a delivery app which has less stuff on it? Oh, why don't you use Caviar? Oh, wait, Caviar was bought by DoorDash.
Right. Right. These, what about Postmates? No, that's Uber Eats.
Uber and now. Like, and it's, the Postmates part is gone.
Yeah.
It's, and all of this is making everything worse. Amazon is full of nonsense now. Amazon is full of all of these terrible Chinese knockoffs, which have names like Hugelspook. Right. And then you look and they all have 5,000 five-star reviews because they've broken the system. Because Amazon doesn't really care. Amazon cares you buy stuff and it's cheap enough. And
sorry, they can do it. Returning my couch from Hugelspook real quick.
From Hugelspook.
Give me
the one with the lead covering.
But the deal.
Holy shit.
But that's the thing. Yeah. What are you going to do? Where are you going to find stuff online? Walmart? Except Walmart is now using third-party sellers.
Yeah. Right.
Like it's...
Yeah, it really feels like it's broken out but beyond tech. Let's take a quick break because I just want to talk about how it feels like this is part of something bigger that's leaked out into basically everything. We'll be right back.
Do you want to hear about the $100 wedding dress that just saved Abercrombie?
Or the tech acquisition that was just like Game of Thrones?
Or the one financial equation that can solve climate change?
Then check out our daily podcast, The Best One Yet, or as we call it, T-Boy.
This is Nick.
This is Jack.
And we pick the three most interesting business news stories every day for the perfect mix.
20 minutes each morning, you're going to feel brighter.
We call it Pop Biz, don't we, Jack?
Where pop culture meets business news. So whether you want to kick off a conversation with your buddies,
or you're going for that promotion at work,
or you just want to know the trends before your friends,
feel brighter by starting your morning with us every weekday.
Listen to The Best One Yet on the Wondery app or wherever you get your pods.
You can listen to The Best One Yet ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. For more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts.
With shows like The Best One Yet, How I Built This, and many more, Wondery means business.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
There's nothing worse than wearing clothes that don't fit right. That's why Tomboy X makes size and gender-inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. Queer-founded and run for over 10 years, you can trust they know a thing or two about making the perfect pair. Feel comfortable in your own skin. Shop online today and use code IHEART for 20% off your first purchase. Only at TomboyX.com. Tomboy X. Fit for you just as you are.
And we're back.
We're back.
And, you know, the thing about the companies, the people making the decisions, deciding what these products actually are and how they interact with the consumers. Like that being completely insulated from the actual people using the products or viewing them as piggies who we don't mind if they get sucked out of a door that pops off the Boeing jet. Feels like it's of a piece with, like, you'll read these articles about how economists are baffled and they're like, the old rules of macroeconomics no longer apply. Like, just look at the pandemic and the, you know, there was supposed to be this massive recession because fucking everything shut down. And yet we kept these good economic metrics throughout, or like the, you know, the stock market never fully crashed on us, and we're baffled. And it just feels like the whole thing is part of this system where the people who are at the very top and who are like involved in the stock market are completely insulated from everything going on below. And
yes,
it's all like, it's that as much as it is like a problem with tech, and tech has made it, has been like the thing that has allowed the disease to spread more quickly. It feels like it's good old fashioned, just like, yeah, like monopolies and like all the shit that was a problem in the early like 20th century, late 19th century. It's just like you just have these people who are making all the important influential decisions who are 100% just decoupled from the people who their decisions affect.
Yes. And that is the overwhelming problem and a symptom of an economy ruled by weak labor standards and weak antitrust.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And the market, you're right, it is a problem outside of tech. Boeing being a great example of a company that just flaunted basic safety. Tesla, another great example. They are not a tech company. They are a car company. Elon Musk is trying to claim they're an AI company because he's just a crook and a liar, and that's all he's capable of doing.
Right.
Tesla is a great example as well of just like a stock completely decoupled from it. It's a meme stock at this point.
Yeah. But it's such a successful meme. I mean, it's a meme stock that has made him the richest person in the world. Right. Can you talk about how people perceive Elon Musk? Like, my dad will say to me, like, Elon Musk is like, I mean, that guy must be so smart, right? I've even heard this from like people who pay attention, who like work in finance and are like, I mean, the guy disrupted like three major markets in the course of like a couple, you know, I think the public image of him is this like Tony Stark, you know, once a generation genius, and like that is how he invented Tesla in his garage or some shit. Whereas, like, you know, how did he actually grow his fortune? What is the thing that he's good at? I think you've like compared him to the CEO of Google. Like, they're good at the same thing, which is creating the illusion of growth that
Elon
that you can sell.
A marketer and his heart. He is an operator and a marketer. He is good at mobilizing capital and good at convincing people to put money into other things, unless it's a consumer product.
Right.
He has never done well with any kind of consumer product. Car, he has done, like, largely because he knows how to hire people, or at least he did before he went crazy. He has always been kind of a shithead. That's also an important thing to know. He has never been a great guy. The myth of Elon Musk being this super genius that invented Tesla is also wrong. He did not. Someone else. I forget who, like, there's a couple of people who actually designed Teslas and founded the company. Elon came in with money.
Right,
he was just, he invested. And you know what? He invested well, and he's been a champion for this, but he's also got lax labor standards, horrible racism problem over at Tesla.
Right.
This has been what he dogpiled a reporter called Aaron Bieber in like 2017, I believe. Like, he has been this guy forever. But what Elon is good at is hype. And he realized in like 2013 that the press would pretty much print anything he said forever. And he used that again and again and again in a way that should not be legal.
Right.
Like, I'm actually really like, if we had a strong enough SEC to actually, like, surely there is a side where it's just a guy being like, yes, so we put the first Neuralink chip inside a person. Right. They can now see the future. And everyone's like, yeah, well, let me just put that on CNBC.com. That sounds true to me.
Right.
This guy is a liar, but people have printed his shit forever. He promised autopilot like 3 years before it even got close to existing. He has made up stuff about Tesla for over a decade. He is just a liar, but he's realized that this is how shit works. The people are just, like, people will just fall for this shit, and people will buy his lies. He hasn't really corrected the record that he isn't the inventor of Tesla, despite the fact that he didn't invent Tesla. He didn't invent any of the SpaceX stuff.
Right.
He didn't invent the Starlink thing. He didn't invent any of this stuff. He's just the hype man. And that was better before he was like, what if I went and just posted something Hitler adjacent on Twitter? That'd be great. Like, he's just, I actually genuinely think as well, people turning against the tech industry, people being angry at tech, have done so because they've kind of seen what he is, what Elon is, the kind of person he really, really is, and how little value he actually has. And also, they've seen how poorly he's run Twitter.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Is there, like, you know, like with all this, like, we all know basically there's just, it's all this illusory shit. It's just to give the, like, the feeling that there's growth, but not offering a product that actually drives it, and the, and people are investing more and more, but into something that, like, doesn't exist. What does it look like when it, like, the market corrects or the bubble pops, or will it, or they're so deep in it? Like, cause I'm trying to, like, what does that reckoning look like for people like Elon Musk and things like that?
Musk less so, though. I think Twitter at some point will have a reckoning. Mm-hmm. I think it is inevitable that this company burns more money than it makes. And also with the fact that Elon now has to replace multiple members of the board of Tesla.
Right.
But the thing that I think is going to be the reckoning is artificial intelligence. Because right now they're trying to put generative AI into everything, a product that no one really knows the reason why it exists. But they're putting it into everything. And the way that this is growing revenue is Microsoft invested in OpenAI and Google invested in Anthropic, the two largest model companies. So that's guaranteed revenue. Those companies have to use them now. Bookable cloud revenue. As the AI industry grows, so does their revenue. Guaranteed. No antitrust law to stop them from literally just investing in a company that would then invest the money that they just invested back in the company. It's a horrible circle. The reason that I think this might fall apart is because they're also scaling up their data centers to match this demand, because AI is extremely compute demanding. It's extremely demanding. You cannot just run it on your computer at home. You need specialized chips and you need a lot of them. And so as they massively scale this system that's deeply unprofitable, eventually people are just going to not use it if it's not useful, if it really isn't actually useful. So suddenly you're going to have companies like Microsoft and Google that invested billions and billions of dollars and hectares of real estate for data centers, and they're going to find themselves with their dicks out. They're going to be like, oh shit, we put all this money into something that no one wants.
Right.
I think that will have a severe enough correction that things will get slightly back on track. Or it destroys the entire tech ecosystem for a few years and everything's kind of screwed.
But I feel, like, there's
a big chance of that, because this stuff doesn't make any money. None of these things are profitable. None of them. Not one of them. And if users stop using it, even if they're forced to, what's left? All of this real estate, all of these data centers, NVIDIA's market cap, where the hell does all this money go? It doesn't go anywhere. It will affect the tech industry and it will be bad. And I think people are kind of done with generative AI already. Like, a regular person does not know why they need ChatGPT. The $7 million Super Bowl commercial for Microsoft's Copilot AI, they had a thing in there where it was like, do me a logo of a classic truck, Mike's truck. If you actually type that into Microsoft Copilot and ChatGPT, generative AI can't do letters.
Right.
It can't do letters. So it's like Masurpa. It looks like Cthulhu.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's another thing. And there's another thing in there where they're like, oh, do the code for my open world game. These aren't ideas. No one's doing this. These aren't normal people things that people, no one saw that and was like, wow, I can now make an open world game. No one's that fucking stupid. Or at least if they are, they'll do it and then nothing will happen.
Right.
So I remember this one story where I was like I talked to somebody who's familiar with markets and was like, so much of like the market growth, I forget what year it was, but was like propped up by AI stuff. And so I was like looking, I was like, so what does that mean? Because nobody really knows what AI is. How is it being propped up? Like, how is that translating to value? And like one of the metrics that they were using was like all about user adoption of ChatGPT mm-hmm. and how it was like the fastest adoption, like faster than TikTok, faster than any social media up to this point. And it turned out to be bullshit. Like it was internal numbers that were bullshit that they were lying about. But the thing that was exciting and that got people excited enough to like invest money was the lie. And so that's still the thing that just lasts. Like it really feels like, in addition to, you know, the them being the input of information coming from the investors, like they're also controlling it so that no bad news gets circled into that system. And it's just this like bullshit economy that just like cycles back and forth in the top and like won't allow that input of information that all of this is bullshit and that people aren't using it really.
Except I feel like what's going to happen is this push, this big lie that you're correct about, by the way, is going to have something bad happen as a result of it.
Right.
I don't know if you remember back in 2012, Knight Capital. Knight Capital was a hedge fund that, due to an incorrectly installed algorithm, invested billions of dollars in stocks it could not afford. It lost them about $410 million. They ended up having to sell for parts.
Yeah.
Something
can't
like
fool
that
all the
is.
People all the time, yeah.
Well, it wasn't even fooling the people. It was just, it never stopped buying. That was, it's a quite complex thing, but the algorithm was off, so it didn't have a point when it stopped buying stocks. It just bought way too much.
Yeah.
Haven't we all been there? But
I bought something too many like stocks that. Yesterday. I feel again. Sick. I'm so
something
bloated.
Like that is going to happen, though.
Yeah.
And Gemini, which is Google's generative AI, they had a big problem where you typed in, what do the founding fathers look like? And it generated a black guy. Like the concept of like a Chinese George Washington is terrifying to these woke, like anti-woke guys. They're like, no. But that was actually significant enough that Sundar Pichai, the CEO of Google, had to say something about it.
Right.
I think something bigger and worse happens with someone who adopts generative AI that destroys a company. I think it does something so significant that scares the market.
Right.
Because there was a Wall Street Journal story a few weeks ago where they were saying Anthropic and OpenAI were having trouble selling their stuff because of the hallucinations.
Right.
Because of these mistakes it was making. And in the article, it's great. You can see the journalists trying to be like, so how are they going to fix this? And the quotes were like, well, at one point, we'll tell the model to not say anything if it doesn't know for sure. And then the next thing was someone saying, yeah, but the problem is if you tell an AI that, sometimes it will just stop answering at all. It'll go, nah, mate, I don't trust myself.
Right.
No, it's like taking someone's keys away when they've been drinking. But that's the thing. At some point, people are going to notice this doesn't do anything. This is not, they want this to be the next, there's a phrase, no one ever gets fired for buying IBM.
Right.
They want this to be that, but it isn't useful. And every person who's a big fan of it is like, well, it will be. And then you ask how, and they're like, I am really sorry. I got to take a phone call. I'll be back in 3 hours. Please don't wait here. I do not have an answer.
Right.
And it's just, I also think that this is overwhelmingly, this kind of stuff is becoming more and more obvious for the regular people, and they're going to get angry. I'm angry about it.
Yeah. No, I think everybody should be angry about it. I just don't know. Like, it feels like they have built this system to insulate them from our anger at this point. And at a certain point, I don't know what it looks like, what the event is that makes it so they can no longer ignore that anger, because, I'm definitely a product of having grown up in this system and, you know, my first memories being like Clintonian, you know, bullshit and just like not being able to imagine something different. But something different is definitely coming.
I think that it's just you're going to start seeing the Facebook advertising model break down.
Yeah.
Online advertising is becoming less profitable and less useful. As that starts dying, the tech industry is going to realize that they've got a big problem when Meta's market cap goes down and when AI stops generating revenue, when it stops being the buzzy thing that you have to install, that you have to integrate, even if you don't know what it does. What happens then? Yeah. What's up, Mark Benioff? Every time, I think at least once a year, we'll say that AI is now in Salesforce, and he has done so since like 2016. Every year, Salesforce claims it has AI in it. It is just a giant con at times. It feels like that. And it feels like, I know it sounds a bit conspiratorial, but feels like they're laughing at us on some level.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
I feel like they're also scared, right? Like they
should be.
Need to. So they need to allow Google to become a monopoly and like, you know, just abuse the smaller companies to remain profitable because Google is too big to fail. Because all of these companies are already like that lie that you're talking about that like that crashes the economy. Like, and that is the thing that everybody from the fucking president down to, you know, the top 0.2% of the economy, like, can't allow to happen.
But even then, Google doesn't need to operate like this. They make like $10 billion of profit a quarter.
Right.
They don't need to run like this. The economy doesn't have to run like this. Tech companies were plenty profitable before. And there are ways to do the Uber. The thing that really frustrates me about Uber is, had Uber been done slightly differently and much slower, it could have been the single most disruptive and important tech company of all time. Had they done everything they did, but made it so that, this is the crazy thing, had they done like labor rights baked into it, would have made them less money, would have made them slower.
In the short run,
But just charge people more. People would have paid more. You would have created a new class of employee.
Yeah.
One covered, one protected, a massive change in labor. That company would have been worth several trillion dollars, just to be clear.
Yeah.
Would have taken them 20 years to get there, but they would have been. Instead, we have this massively unprofitable, labor-screwing piece of shit company that has the monopoly on cabs, because cabs were built on another kind of exploitative system, the medallion system.
Right.
Right.
And it's just, things can change, and indeed, I think they will, through awareness alone, because when I did the first Rot Economy episode, I've got so many emails from people being like, oh shit, I didn't know that. I feel that more people knowing will put that pressure on there.
Yeah.
People will stop using these products. And as users stop being interested in like these dog shit products, things will change.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just more about creating enough of the awareness around it, because I think most people get caught up in the razzle dazzle of it all.
Mm-hmm.
And you see like even the people who, you know, like it's like we're a country that's ran by older people who don't understand technology. So they're not understanding what the borders should be or the guardrails should be. So that creates this environment for people to just completely shift the thinking to be like, rather than, you know, like making a product, what we need to do is like sell one of those companies, because that's how people talk. And it's not about making the thing. It's like, yo, man, we got to create a company we can sell. And that's just it. And because of that, there's no value in it. And it merely just becomes about the act of making said company and then flogging it to somebody for a ton of money.
I will wrap it up because I know I've gone on and on about this, but the actual thing that I think this comes back to is a societal problem with the concept of business itself. I think that we have lionized big companies over good companies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I run a small PR firm, and I have, and people for years were like, you need to scale. And I'm always like, why? And they're like, because that's what good companies big.
Yeah.
It isn't.
No, and I think we
lionize managers and management. Yeah. But I think especially the pandemic proved this. It's very obvious that the managers and the CEOs don't do the work.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think there is a labor awakening. It's slow, but it's happening, that will change almost every step of everything we're talking about.
Now, this whole conversation has been, you know, having worked at and run Cracked back in the day, and just, you know, it started out as this website that had these really good articles because we had like a handful of really talented people, and we kept like bringing these talented people in to focus on making the good product. But there was also these people who were like focused on doing the ads in the sidebar and like making those ads trick you into thinking you were clicking on content.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what the entire internet became. Like the people who made the content got choked out. And the people who do the sidebar fake ads that trick you into thinking you're clicking on content where you're actually clicking on something that is going to fuck your computer. And
you know who got rich off of Reddit? A community entirely made up of free contributions. Sam Altman.
Right.
He made $400 million.
Yeah.
Like that is the guy, not the moderators, not the Redditors who made the internet better. Yeah. For their Redditing, I guess you'd call it. No, Sam Altman, a guy whose only role at that company was to put money in at one point.
Right,
this is something that I feel like if more people are aware of, they will turn on the tech industry, and they bloody well should.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Well,
and
Ed,
saving us. Yeah.
Such a pleasure having you, man. Where can people find you, follow you, read more from you?
So you can find me on X the Everything app at Ed Zitron, EDZITRON.
X the Everything app.
You can find me on Blue Sky, zitron.bsky.social or .app, I forget. Just type in Zitron, I should come up.
Yeah.
And you can find the podcast betteroffline.com. Click podcast and it's got all your links that you could need. And the newsletter is where'syoured.app.
Amazing. Is there a work of media that you've been enjoying?
I've been listening a lot to Queens of the Stone Age's In Times New Roman, which I realize is a band I've now mentioned too much on this podcast. Came out late last year. It's an amazing album. No, mid last year. It's an amazing album, but I stopped listening to it for a few months because I'd massively overplayed it and then just got right back into it. I love that band. So it's like their second best album. It's really something.
Amazing.
What number album was that? That can't, was that the fourth?
Seven?
Oh, wow. Man, okay. I think after the one that Dave Grohl drummed on, that was sort of the when I stopped.
Yeah, that was Songs of the Deaf, and that was the second one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Amazing. Miles, where can people find you? What's work media you've been enjoying?
Find me on the @-based life forms, at Miles of Gray. Yeah, and then you can just find me, you know, doing that stuff there. Also, if you like basketball, check out Jack and I's basketball podcast, Miles and Jack Got Mad Boosties. If you like 90 Day Fiancé, catch me on my 90 Day Fiancé podcast for 20 Day Fiancé.
I just watched the one with Amphisa. It was horrible.
Oh, man. The way... George, man, he gets
it. He's a criminal.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. He's a scammer, too. Now she's a bodybuilder. So, you know, shout out Amphisa. Or at least was doing that. Let's see. A tweet that I like. Natalie at JBFan911 tweeted, "I don't care if I have microplastics in my body. You know what else is in there? Love, joy, kindness. Mm-hmm. They will take care of the microplastics." So, just a grim tweet because there was that recent study that was like, there's not a placenta on Earth that doesn't have microplastics.
We're mostly
in it.
Microplastics at this
point. Yeah, yeah. We're all plastic. We're all plastic.
Yum, yum, yum.
Yep.
All right. You can find me on Twitter at @Jack_O'Brien. I enjoyed this tweet. John Frankensteiner on March 2nd tweeted, "Happy Lou Reed Day." And it's a interview with Vulture where Vulture said, "Sirius's impending merger with XM is anticipated to boost earnings. Do you own any stock in the company?" And Lou Reed responded, "What are you, a fucking asshole? I'm here telling you the truth about music, and you want to know if I have stock in the fucking radio? You fucking piece of shit. What did I do to deserve that?"
Can I read one that's thematically relevant as well?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's from @Drill, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
AI. "Sorry, I'm not allowed to speculate upon the sexuality of 1970s game show hosts. Me. This is like talking to the smartest man in the world."
Holy shit, you're so smart. Hey,
fuck.
Oh my god.
How'd you do that?
You can find me on Twitter at @Jack_O'Brien. You can find us on Twitter at Daily Zeitgeist. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes, where we link off to the information that we talked about in today's episode, as well as a song that we think you might enjoy. Miles,
what song
do you think people might enjoy?
I mistakenly thought that, you know, the Schoolboy Q's album Blue Lips came out on Wear Blue Awareness Day, which was about raising colon cancer awareness, errantly.
That's why.
But either way, the album did come out, and I think it's a fantastic album. It's different than his other albums. I would say it's his To Pimp a Butterfly, because it's not just full of trunk exploding, like, you know, just, you know, bangers. But this track... The whole album's great, but I'm just going to point this one out. It's called Pig Feet. Check it out. It's featuring Childish Major. This is from the Schoolboy Q album, Blue Lips. So, yeah, get into the whole album, though. Get into the whole album.
Okay. We will link off to that in the footnotes. The Daily Zeitgeist is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. That is going to do it for us this morning.
Mm-hmm.
Back this afternoon to tell you what's trending, and we'll talk to y'all then. Bye.
Up the Raider Nation.
There's nothing worse than wearing clothes that don't fit right. That's why Tomboy X makes size and gender-inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. Queer-founded and run for over 10 years, you can trust they know a thing or two about making the perfect pair. Feel comfortable in your own skin.
Shop online today and use code IHEART for 20% off your first purchase. Only at TomboyX.com. Tomboy X. Fit for you just as you are.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.